Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Dolphin Show, we're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we are streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Coming up at 5:30, you'll hear from Clinton Yates as we check in with Yates on a Friday, as we are wont to do. Yates is going to chime in on the RFK story as well. He has, of course, covered this when he was back in D.C. working for the Washington Post, and has thoughts on it as someone who grew up going to games at RFK, who's lived in Ward 7. And so our usual Friday hit with Yates will go along those lines. Right now, though, we are going to do a very special edition of Not My Beat on the RFK story.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
And while this is not my beat anymore, because I don't have a beat anymore, now I'm just a talk show host, this is going to be our top story for most of the next 3 months. We are going to be following this closely. We'll follow develops as it happens, and we are hoping to talk with more and more people about it, from experts and economists to the mayor herself. So Mayor Bowser, if you're listening to our show, you also can call in like you did to Grant Danny yesterday. We will take your call. We have questions we would like to ask you. City council members as well. We are working on having a couple of city council members on, hopefully even as soon as next week. But there's been a lot of people who are talking already. And so what I want to do is go ahead and play you some of what you need to know, some of what you, I think you should hear from the participants involved here. So let's start with Charles Allen. Charles Allen is a city council member who currently does not support this deal.
With many of my colleagues, I've shared this with the chairman as well. I think he shared it with you yesterday. A majority of the council does not support this proposal as is. It's too much of on the public taxpayer dollar right now. I believe I have several colleagues, though, and I think all of us should be going into this process to try to get to a better deal, try to think through what could this look like. I think that there is certainly room to see changes to the deal that might garner the full support of the council. But as of right now, that majority is not there.
And you hear Charles Allen, a city council member, referencing Phil Mendelson talking on Grant and Danny the previous day on if the council supports the deal. Here is that.
You said you don't think there are the votes. Can you expound upon that? Are you pretty confident right now that they don't have seven people that would support this?
Well, you know, the problem with my answering a yes is that sounds a bit confrontative. And I don't wish to be confrontative at this point. But I think that if this was before the council today, they would not vote for it, in part because we don't know enough, but in part because they would see the price tag too high, and in part because we have not seen what the mayor is proposing with the budget and the cuts that we know they're going to be in the budget. You know, let me just say on that, the mayor's budget was due on April 2nd. We will, if we're lucky, get it the middle of May. That's 7 weeks late. And we expect that there's going to be close to $1 billion in program cuts in what she sends to us. What is she cutting, and where is she getting the money for the stadium? And I think with those unknowns, it's hard to say that she would have support right now.
So
one thing I'm curious.
These things get worked out.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I don't want the headline from you sports guys that oh my God, the council is the council's about to stop to kibosh the stadium because I think that's premature.
So Phil Mendelson, I think, does a really terrific job there of saying, like, hey, I don't want, like, right now the answer is no, but that's because we don't know enough yet. Well, apparently that headline got back to none other than Mayor Bowser, who called in to Grant and Danny yesterday. This was not a setup interview. She called into the show to say that, hey, the lack of support, don't believe it.
Got in the car, I'm headed uptown to a meeting, and I just wanted to chime in because I love the presentation, but like so many economic development projects, there's a lot of misinformation, and we're looking forward to getting people all the information that they need. But the one thing that I have to say, I heard one of the members of the council who is opposed to this project, was opposed to it before anything was announced, is opposed to having an NFL stadium there at all, say that a majority of the council members don't support it, and that is false. He and one other council member have registered that they will vote no, and all other council members are working with us and the team to get the information that they need. We've been keeping them up to date for weeks about how negotiations were going, and they're very excited for the opportunity.
So Mayor Bowser's like, no, and for whatever it's worth, it's not just Mayor Bowser. Brooke Pinto is the Ward 2 city council member, and she was actually at Capital One Arena where Grant and Danny were on site the other day ahead of the Caps Game 5 win over the Canadians, and she also disagrees with the chair, Phil Mendelson, on whether or not there is enough support by the council to get this passed.
No, I don't. A couple things on this. So this is not a new bill or new law that we need to have 7 votes to pass. This is part of the mayor's budget proposal. So this needs to be referred to the Committee on Business and Economic Development Committee, which is chaired by Councilmember McDuffie. All 4 of those council members who you mentioned who were at the announcement on Monday serve on the business committee.
Okay.
So we would welcome the opportunity to have public hearings on this deal in the next couple of weeks, have a roundtable on it, dive into the details, hear from the public, move forward a committee report that's supportive of this development, and then it would go to the full council. Now, because it's part of the budget, if somebody wants to move an amendment to excise this entire deal and come up with a new proposal, that's in their right, but technically they would need 7 votes to do that.
So you start to get into some of those details and things get hairy, and we'll go through some of the details then. First, what do people want? That is one of the questions, and Brooke Pinto has thoughts on that.
The last several years, what I have heard is when I've spoken to communities about this all across the city, I've said, what if we could build a stadium, but also build housing and retail and hotels and green space? And you know what so many people said to me? That would be ideal, but that's not possible. You'll never make that happen. It's happening. It's all in the term sheet. This is what people have been calling for. And so this idea that we're going to, you know, turn our back on the opportunity for the largest economic development opportunity in our history is short-sighted, and I don't think is where we should be.
Mayor Bowser has more thoughts.
Well, the biggest thing that I want to correct is that this is going to be one thing or the other. I think people have in their minds the current RFK Stadium and the sea of parking that surrounds it. But what we're proposing is a vibrant, vital, mixed-use development with a built-in anchor. So there are going to be 5 separate districts. Arts and Entertainment District, the Stadium District, Kingman Park, where we think we can build up to 5,000 to 6,000 units of housing. There's going to be 30 acres of park space, and there's going to be the opportunity for us to have our own indoor sportsplex where our children, who now go out to Maryland and Virginia for indoor track and gymnastics and cheerleading will have a world-class space for themselves that the district is going to build. So these are all of the opportunities. But here's the other thing that I think is the big missing piece. And that is that you just snap your fingers and 180 acres is developed with housing. It doesn't happen that way. What housing providers need is they need a catalytic anchor to get a site like that going. And having a built-in anchor that's bringing $2.7 billion in worldwide expertise is the jumpstart that this site needs. Without it, in 2030, we won't have a vibrant stadium that's generating revenue. What we will have is a slew of community meetings talking about what's going to happen there and the hope that it will deliver in the following 10 years. So the time for RFK is now. I heard some thoughtful comments about why don't we wait or why don't we try this first. We don't have that opportunity. We come to terms with the team, or the team is going to have to find a new location.
And so that is a huge part of this, right? If DC wants to spend some time waiting, and then they ultimately decided in 3 years, oh, the stadium was the best option. That stadium's going to be under construction in Landover. And if you're going to spend 5 years debating what's going to happen, and the stadium's going to open Landover 2.0, or even if it's whatever, but like that decision will have been made. Like, this is ready made now. This is one of the most compelling arguments, I think, for the stadium. But economists agree that you don't need a stadium to anchor a neighborhood. The Wharf is a great example of this. Now, if you want to say the Anthem as a concert venue anchors, but I think if you turn the Anthem into a bar, like, people would still go to the Wharf. You have great restaurants, you have housing, you have all the stuff. If you turn the Anthem into a grocery store, that might even be a better use for the people that live there and people that live in the area. Like, you'd have people going in and out, and this is the argument that economists make, right? But they do that in large. And there's a bunch of different stuff that I'm sure we'll get into with economists and others over the next couple of weeks. But that stuff is all going to take time to figure out. The RFK plans with the stadium are available right now, and they could get started and get going. So here's what Brooke Pinto, Ward 2 council member, said about what she would tell people who think they could do something better with the RFK land than a football stadium.
I would say it's been 35 years and it hasn't come. This is the best deal that has ever come to us. This is a good deal for district residents, for visitors, not just sports fans, although it is fantastically exciting for that. But it accomplishes so many of our goals. Look, one or two council members have said that they don't support this deal. You know, I think the vast majority of us are really excited. We understand how important this is going to be for our city, how galvanizing it will be for our city spirit to accept our residents and visitors from around the country and world to come to this site. There's no other stadium in the country where you can look out and see the water, see the National Monument, and really be part of the history of RFK and the nation's capital.
Compelling, certainly from a storytelling standpoint. And again, one more from Pinto here. She simply says this is the best opportunity to put this land to use.
This site of 180 acres of land has been sitting vacant for decades. This is the surest and fastest way to make productive use in an extremely exciting way, but also a successful way for our city. To bring the Commanders home, we're thrilled to do so, but also to build 6,000 units of housing, a third of which will be affordable, to build hotels, retail. We're going to have a sports complex for our kids so people don't have to take their families and their kids to play an hour or two away, as I speak to families about all the time. So there's so many community benefits as part of this deal that is an extremely important investment for the city that residents have been calling for. This has been sitting vacant. I have not seen another offer on the table or another deal on the table that would be a better use of this land. And so I think it's time that we move forward with the single largest private investment in our city's history.
Right. So you have the benefits. You also have the fact that you're not getting $2.7 billion. Now, a lot of that, if not most of that, is going to go to the actual stadium, but you're going to get a lot of private money here. And that is something that is probably worth mentioning, obviously, as well. So then the question is, how do you work out the details to get the people that are no to yes? And one of the big, things that we're going to spend time talking about, apparently, is parking. I think fans want to know that there's going to be a place to tailgate. And for someone like Charles Allen, he wants to know how the money's going to flow, because parking revenue is an enormous thing. And the way the current proposal is set up, Events DC is going to build the parking garages. But if you ask Charles Allen, pay attention to who gets the revenue. It'd be the Commanders, and he doesn't like that.
Oh, this is one of my favorite parts of the deal, though. So we would not only pay to build them, we would own them, and then under the terms of the deal, the Commanders get all the parking revenue from it, from the parking garages that we build and own. That's what I mean when I say this is a bad deal. It's a bad deal for the city right now. There's a lot of elements. If this is something that's going to happen, a lot of this has to change.
Would that parking revenue only be for home football games, or would it be any time like Beyonce comes, or I do stand-up comedy there, I'll probably sell out 65,000, 70,000, I'm sure. But you know what I mean? Like, is it for any event, or is it for
the night out with Grant and Danny?
Yeah.
When we're bringing in, you know, we're gonna do the Pat McAfee bit, and we go 65K. You guys make that money, or the team?
The team does. So the way it works is that this is a development deal, right? So they're getting that. That's what the term sheet says, is that they get the revenue from all of that. That just isn't fair for DC taxpayers. If we're gonna pay to build this stuff, which again, I don't think we should be building 8,000 parking spots, that doesn't work. Think about another stadium. Think of Wembley in the UK. 90,000 seat stadium. They have 2,000 parking spots. Our ballpark has 1,250. There's no need for 8,000 parking spots. All you're going to do is just create a lot of people sitting in traffic, and then you're going to wall off the stadium, the fields, the river with a whole just bay of parking garages, a whole wall of parking garages. I just don't think that makes a whole lot of sense, and that's definitely not what I want to put your public tax dollar.
I got bad news for Charles Allen. Anthony, have you been to London?
I have not.
The public transportation in London, the tube, the train system, all that, it's a lot better than Metro. Also, the way taxis can get in and out of, in and around London is way different. There are taxi lanes specifically in London. It's a very common thing in Europe. Same thing is true when we were in Paris this summer. You'll see it when you go for your trip in June and July. But when we were there for the Olympics, you get in a taxi, and then you're basically in your own separate taxi express lane just for taxi drivers. You can't compare traveling in Europe to traveling in a major American city, because we are just unbelievable idiots when it came to how we designed our cities compared to what they do over there. And people want to drive to the games. And especially because you're going to have people coming in from Maryland and Virginia that are far away. It's not easy to get in. So going to Wembley in London is very different than going for Commanders fans, but also people from the region, because our country is a lot bigger. But Mayor Bowser says she's got a more specific complaint with the way that Charles Allen described all that.
That he doesn't understand complicated municipal finance and infrastructure finance. That's all that says to me. What it says is that that revenue wouldn't exist but for the stadium. And so we use revenue that wouldn't exist but for projects all the time to finance those projects. It's a very common tool. And so what else would he have us do than use the money generated on the project to make the project financially feasible?
Now, in fairness to the council member, my guess is his answer would be, I would make Josh Harris pay for it, and that money that is generated in revenue is going to then go to building schools and other things. And I think that could be construed as fair. But I just did a little math here. At 8,000 parking spaces, if every single parking space cost $80 for every single event, which is a number that I picked out of thin air, so we're 8,000 times 80. Anthony, you ready for you're mathing with my math here?
Oh, this is easy math.
8,000 times 80. And let's pretend there are 50 events a year, which is probably actually way too many. How many events do you think that there are going to be per year at this stadium?
Like, maybe like 25, 30.
So we have 8,000 times 80 space, $80 times 8,000 spaces. So that's $640,000 in gross revenue per event times 25 events is $16 million, which sounds like a lot of money. And it is. And look, $16 million ain't nothing to sneeze at. If Josh Harris is putting in $2.7 billion, like, we're talking about very, very small percentages of payback on parking revenue. And so this is where the conversation gets complicated. Is there a way to split that? Because that money could go a long way in D.C. to help build schools, update libraries, do whatever other public services you want to do, maintain green spaces. Like, pick any public service that involves building, or if, God forbid, you wanted to put it not in the Capital Works Fund and put it in the actual We Pay People Fund, and that money could go to paying firefighters and teachers, whatever. Like, these are the questions I want to ask Mayor Bowser. I would like to ask her, is that an option? Or is that just not how this business is done? And if it's not done that way, is there a way to do it that way? So these are the fights that they're going to have over the next 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks between now and July when this thing ultimately gets voted on. And we'll be following it. We're hoping to talk to more people. We're hoping to get some answers to those questions. But hopefully now you've heard a bunch of, different sides of it. You've heard different people make the different arguments. And maybe you're starting to develop more of your own opinion as we've tried to keep you informed here on The Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Of course, if you want even more on all of that, Sam Fortier and I sat down for about 45 minutes and discussed it earlier in the week. That full conversation, if you missed it the past couple of days on the radio show, is uninterrupted, uncut podcast form in our podcast feed. Just search The Hoffman Show or watch it in full on YouTube at Craig Hoffman. When we get back, Clint Yates chimes in on this whole RFK situation. He covered the Nats Park deal back in the day. Does he think that there are good parallels to draw between the Nats Park deal and the RFK deal? Yates, next.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. It's Friday. Yay, Fridays. That means Clint Yates is here. Yates, what up?
Nothing much, man. How are you? I'm excited for this weekend. May the 4th is this weekend, so Star Wars Celebration will be on deck.
Yeah. You guys do anything special on the pod?
No, but we have already launched our newest episode for Andor, which is out, but more importantly, because I'm in Los Angeles, there will be some events to attend. So I might be going to the Academy Museum to check out some of that stuff, because that is always a fun time.
Indeed. So you can check that out. And of course, also Clinton and Friends on ESPN Radio every single day. Big story here, of course, Clinton, that I am excited to talk to you about is the Commanders announced Monday their intention to return to D.C. officially in conjunction with the mayor's office. Of course, it still needs D.C. City Council approval. When you were working at the Post, I'm sure you would have covered this story like back then. You also have a background covering like D.C. Metro.
Yep.
I'm going to start as broad as I can. Like, what was your reaction to the announcement, the press conference, and kind of where that the fact that that announcement was made given the current state of play and how much work is still to be done?
Well, honestly, we could spend an hour on this, and I'm going to try to be succinct, not because I think that it's like necessary, but I do think that there is some level of getting lost in the sauce that is separate from the actual stadium matter. So for those who don't understand, there's federal land, blah, blah, blah. Part of the reason why this was never turned over directly to DC is because certain people across the country basically felt the city didn't deserve it for one reason or another, separate from the football stadium. And that alone was a controversial enough situation for literal decades that the conversation that was harbored around what should be done with the space ranged from something much larger than any football stadium. I remember literally a decade plus ago when I was at a community meeting or nine where people were trying to figure out what was the best actual use for this site. Parks. I don't know, you know, trying to build some sort of like Hollywood facility, maybe expanding a university there. There were all sorts of things well beyond just the stadium that were part of the discussion. That being said, once it became clear that the stadium was back in play as something to be done, the entire timbre of this conversation changed drastically for people who live in that neighborhood, because I used to live in that neighborhood as well for a long time. So there are two separate discussions on what it means to the city versus what it means to the team.
Well, let's start off with the neighborhood discussion then, because I think that's one of the more interesting ones. And I think where I've kind of come down is, if you live in that neighborhood and you're like, I don't want the stadium here, I'm like, probably shouldn't. You knew this was possible. Like, you had to factor this into the equation. Also, on a separate level, a lot of the folks that don't want the stadium had no problem kicking out other residents that used to live there. Yeah. Specifically, a lot of rich white people kicked out a lot of poor black folks as that area was gentrified. So I am not going to have a whole lot of sympathy for you if that is you now being like, I don't want a stadium in my
backyard. Hold on, though. I think that there is an easy way to sort of dismiss it as NIMBYism, but the other thing about it is that the reason why a lot of people think that this is not a bad idea is because they believe, as a result of the conversation we just had, that there are better options for the space than the stadium. And so if you put it in the sort of the double bind of it's the stadium or nothing, you're not actually giving it the proper context for what it could be. And that's where I think a lot of people miss the mark on what people are thinking about when they say, I don't want a stadium here. It's not that I want nothing here. It's right. That the stadium might not be the best option considering what it is. Just to clear that up.
No, I think that's totally fair. And that's why this gets complex, right? Is there is option, like at this point, we're past option A, which is it stayed where it was. Like, they have unlocked the land from the federal government. They are going to do something. That is the negotiations and ultimately the vote that is going to happen in July. I'm just saying, like, for the neighborhood objectors, sure. Okay, fine. We want something else. But I just don't have a lot of sympathy, a lot of empathy for folks that are like, the stadium is going to cause too much traffic when they chose to live in a neighborhood that was like the RFK Stadium neighborhood. Like, well, what did you think was going to happen?
I mean, that's an excellent question. But at the same time, what people thought was going to happen versus what did are two different discussions. That stadium hasn't been occupied like that for literally 40 years. It's been used, but DC United wasn't actually causing problems in the neighborhood like that. There was no national team games, USA women's or men's aside. And the Nats, people were not clogging up the neighborhood. Like, it's been a full-blown generation and a half almost since regular traffic like that was a thing. And you know, you can say it was inevitable, but again, it's been a really long time. People who have lived there have more sort of sleepy lives than I think what a stadium brings there. That's part of the reason why they're there.
Fine.
It is. We can disagree to agree to disagree. But I know that as somebody that lived in the neighborhood, I understand where that comes from. People can barely get around town there anyway. Never mind if you add this to the mix.
No, I get it. I just, at some point, like, you're part of a larger ecosystem, and do you want the city? And I understand that, like, there's plenty of people that live there that don't give a rip about the Washington Commanders, and they don't want the stadium in D.C. or don't really care whether the stadium's in D.C. One of the other things that I think is interesting, Clinton Yates with us, of course, ESPN commentator, host of Clinton and Friends on ESPN Radio, D.C.'s very own, longtime Washington Post columnist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other arguments that I think is interesting is I do not think this land gets unlocked from the federal government without the lobbying that the Commanders and the NFL do.
Yeah.
Now, Josh Harris has said, like, I wanted to be a good citizen and I unlock the land, and then we'll do our best to see if we can secure it. And that's the right public stance to stay. But what validity do you give to that argument that if you're the Commanders and you go sit down with a city council member who's on the fence and you're like, look, the fact that you have this decision to make in the first place is thanks to us. Does that move you at all?
I think that that's going to be the worst possible strategy for Josh, even if it is the actual truth of the matter. I think the best strategy for Josh is to say, listen, even if, because you got to understand, a lot of these council members are also not DC natives. These are people who just live here. And I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody in specific, but it means something different to different people. I, as a DC native who is not a Commanders fan, understand the arguments of the city. But there are plenty of people who are Commanders fans who are not from DC who are like, yo, why would you think twice about this? So there's all sorts of different constituencies in terms of how people arrive. I think that the best method that Josh Harris could use is to say, we've got to find a way to collaborate on this site that makes sure that nobody other than the district benefits from it as much as we do. And whether that's through how the public funding works or whatever, because reminder, if you give up a certain amount of public funding, it means that effectively Josh Harris can do what he wants with it if he's controlling the entirety of the site, potentially leading to the city losing out on a lot of money. So what you don't want is a scenario in which they're finding a way to make it in spite of, if you will, district officials. Therefore, the initial process of planning does not benefit things the way that you want. You can't just turn it all over to Josh and say, build everything you want, and we don't care. That's not only irresponsible, but I think that's also a little too much to put on an NFL football team or a billionaire, even if he does have a lot of other interests. I think it is in good faith to the city if city council members say, hey, look, all right, there's the stadium site, but then there's everything else. We need to talk about the everything else well before we discuss some dome stadium that's potentially going to get, let's say, a Women's World Cup final in whatever amount of years. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to get that part first and not just say, oh, yeah, we'll throw in some housing and some mixed-use retail, blah, blah, blah. No, that's got to be the primary element to me, because that's where the big gap in understanding of what development is goes wrong. Things are promised, things don't work out. Next thing you know, it's a bunch of one studio, one bedroom, two bedroom apartment max places that are charging rent that nobody can afford who's ever lived here anyway. And that's what I'm saying. You've got to have some accountability beforehand before you start putting shovels in the ground.
Right. And that stuff is being worked on right now, right? The initial plan has all these plans for mixed use stuff. This region's going to have this. This region's going to be more like, they literally have like neighborhoods within the neighborhood. And it's like, this one's going to be residential. There's a 30% affordable housing, percentage, right, that is negotiable. And one thing that I talked about with Sam Fortier the other day is, what happens to the other 70? Is it then 70% luxury, or is there 40% that's middle class and then 30% luxury? And like, those details are going to matter a lot as well. But considering how much money the Commanders are putting in, the fact that it is a 75%+ private investment, the Harris Group is the one that is going to be commissioning all of that.
Sure.
And so that is an interesting thought too, that you just brought up, of the less public money, the less public control, because eventually, like, Josh Harris as a landlord is going to want to recoup as much as he can, assuming that that is how the arrangement is going to work on some level.
Yes, exactly right. And that's something to keep in mind for fans as well. And also, like, I don't want to get too far into this because I sound like some sort of a, you know, rambling professor, but the idea of how that kind of project works from a development standpoint is not always one for one. And you talked about the idea of, I don't want too much traffic. Like, that is a singular context in terms of what people believe Sundays are going to be, just for reference point. But when you have living in a neighborhood for a long time, and all of a sudden a big thing comes to the neighborhood, on a day-to-day basis, quality of life is affected to a point that might make you want to live somewhere else. And that is a different form of displacement that happens in a separate one-for-one context than what would be on the actual site per se. And that's where these kind of malleable gray areas come in about what development actually means for a neighborhood. And so if there's a lot more of that in NIMBYism, it's not, you can't just drop in from the sky, like, I don't know, The Sims or Roller Coaster, you know, whatever that game is, and just drop things in. And then all of a sudden they're thriving and integrating with the community. That's just not how it works. And so I'm as interested in how other areas of the development work from other partners that are not just on the site, because that's actually how it happens well beyond the plans.
So Clint Yates with us here on the Hoffman Show. You covered the Nats Park stuff, right?
Yeah, big time.
So how would you describe some of those conversations then, and how would you Would you describe what's happened in Navy Yard and Nats Park through some of those lenses you just said as a success?
I would qualify it as a success for what their goal was, but I would not qualify it as a success for what the intended possibilities were in terms of outcomes. Now, I'm sort of getting a little long in the tooth here, but there's a documentary called Chocolate City. It was made by a girl that went to my high school. I only call her a girl. She's a grown woman now because I've known her for a long time, Ellie Walton. It's about the Arthur Kapper projects that were literally raised, R-A-Z-E-D, in order to make room for all of these other things. Now, why is that important? Because they were promised a lot of stuff, but ultimately they didn't have the manpower, they didn't have the political know-how, and they didn't have the backing to fight for themselves, and eventually developers kind of ran roughshod. Now, a lot of those developers are people from the area, so it's not like you're entirely ripping anything away from those constituents who have something, but for the people who have literally lived their whole lives in that part, they don't got time to be fighting big-time developers about anything. And so now, while the area is improved in this context, remember when there was a shooting outside of Nats Park on South Capitol Street? That whole other side, SciFact Gardens, is still, respectfully, a hellhole. People would not want to be walking through there on the way to Nats games. It is literally adjacent as a neighborhood. They haven't seen much change other than maybe getting a couple of food service jobs at Nats Park. So you got to be real about what's going on. Things are going to go away. It's just a matter of whether or not you can say to yourself, I think it's worth it for football. I think the popular vote is yes. But I also think that because people want to make themselves feel better in D.C., they're acting like something can't happen that absolutely can.
Right. The one difference, and I'm saying difference not to say that this makes everything okay, because I think this goes back to the other form of displacement that you talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to get kicked out of their house because currently the land that is going to get built on is unoccupied.
Right.
Right. This is this big, giant 180 acres where there is currently the fields at RFK and a couple of other things, but there's no residential on that. But that does not mean there aren't second wave, third wave effects on the surrounding neighborhoods.
That's exactly right. And that's the issue. And I'll tell you this, just to kind of not exactly wrap this up, but to kind of put a pin on it. My father, he went to Eastern High School. Eastern High School is the closest high school to RFK Stadium that there is. When he was a senior in high school, they built it. He saw it go up, and he will see it go down, which is a crazy thing in itself. That school has been about as underpopulated as probably any in the D.C. public school system as there are. Spingarn on the other side, on Benning Road, which is the second closest high school in D.C., included. Eastern High School, to me, will be the bellwether of whether or not all of these operations around RFK are helping the actual community. The Turkey Bowl is typically held there, the DCIAA Championship on Thanksgiving morning. It's got a couple things, but it is an old place that does not have once the standard it had. If Eastern High School is doing okay, I'll believe that the neighborhood has been accounted for in a way that makes sense within the rest of this. And I know that's one random example that happens to be personal, but that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about when I mean local stuff. It's not just food deserts. It's not just, oh, well, you're going to get a job at the stadium. It's like, what happens for people who are invested in the space, as it were, generationally? And that's hard to tell always until it goes away.
And then last question for you, because you did grow up going to games at RFK. Like, you're one of the people who talks about, I was at the seat cushion game. I was there when the stands were shaking.
Yeah.
Like, how do you balance all that stuff we just talked about with the very real, like, joy that could come with Jaden Daniels leading a very good football team on opening day into 2030?
I think that you've got to let the nostalgia go, and you've got to create a facility that people want to be in that harkens back. You cannot recreate RFK. I don't necessarily even think you should try. Is there some sort of immersive experience maybe you could have within there as an entertainment element? Sure. But again,
Visit our bouncing seat station outside section 128.
Like, let's be real. It was the 80s and 90s, and it was dangerous in that bad boy. You know what I'm saying? You can't just do that the way that you used to be able to. So I think that there's so much overall that they can get right that it is worth pursuing. But I just want to be real about what the downsides are to operations like that. I'm so, so, so happy, though, for a lot of people who've had a lot of experiences at that site. It's not just about NFL football. Like I said before, DC United played there. The Nationals played there for three seasons. It was a community facility for a long time. And if this place can get back to that, because the landscape's a little different, you've already got Audi, you've already got Nats Park, then they've got something. If it's just another football stadium that people go to once a week, that's not what you want.
Yeah. I just think, though, that it's the nation's capital. It's Washington, D.C. And you got the World Cup coming in 2026, and there's not a game? That's embarrassing.
Right.
Building a world-class facility. Now, that world-class facility could be in Landover, right? If this falls through, they're likely headed back to Landover. They'll do Landover 2.0. That stadium will be way better than FedEx ever was, or whatever the Northwest Stadium ever was. Like, they'll do a good job because Josh Harris is good at doing a good job. But to have it actually within the boundaries of the district, I think just means more, not only to the city, but like what it means to be a major city in the country and in the world.
I agree with that to a certain degree. And I'm going to call upon an example that you're probably not going to like. And I've thought about this, and I don't necessarily know how hard I believe this, but it's something I considered. There's a world in which I believe they should move the headquarters and the practice facility to the RFK site and just have a bunch of other stuff there and let the stadium be wherever it's going to be. You're going to get daily people getting in there with that kind of a situation, somewhere between, I don't know, the Star in Dallas. And I'm not saying you mimic that because the Cowboys have done it, but that type of model is actually really cool. I genuinely think that if you said, hey, the headquarters of the Washington Commanders is at RFK, you can come here any day you like and get all of the nostalgia, all of the experience. We might even play a couple high school football games here, et cetera, et cetera, yeah. Or utilize the facility for youth, and you get an all-encompassing situation with, say, a mall and all the other stuff. But on game day, because we know we've got actual traffic problems and we're trying to reduce the parking to 8,000 people, which is a disaster, you can go somewhere else. Like, there's a world in which I think that would have been honestly just as good of an option, and the spiritual home element would have been satisfied too.
But that's an interesting thought, because I've talked a lot about, I think they should move the practice facility to the Landover spot.
Yeah.
You already own the land. They need the land in Ashburn, super valuable to sell to these data companies, because it's wired up for the data centers.
Right.
But that's an interesting like backup plan too.
Right.
And by the way, it also satisfies your old pal Tom Sherwood's desire to have the team headquartered in D.C. for tax purposes and get all them corporate taxes going into the coffers.
Tom Sherwood, what a guy.
What a guy. On the show earlier this week.
Love Tom.
Lectured on us on all the things that we needed to know, because I asked him to, and he
Tom's a great guy. Yes. So is his son, Peyton.
Clint Yates, everybody. Catch him on ESPN Radio. Also check out the Star Wars podcast, specifically on Sunday, because that'll be May the 4th. Thank you, sir.
Have a great weekend, Gregory. This was a fun one.
A fun one indeed. Clint Yates with us here on The Hoffman Show. Again, there's been so much coverage of this RFK story this week here on the Team 980 at our sister station across the hall, 106.7 The Fan. You've got interviews with Mayor Bowser. You've got interviews with Phil Mendelson, the D.C. City Council chair, including earlier today on the Kevin Sheehan show. Brooke Pinto joined GND on set at Capital One Arena earlier this week. Charles Allen, we did a big recap to start the hour. If you want more, definitely check out that segment on the Rewind, on the Odyssey app, on the podcast, however it is that you enjoy our show on demand when you don't catch it live. All right, it's coming up in the final hour here on a Friday. A final hour, Anthony, that we didn't know if it was going to exist, because if the Caps had lost, We'd be in pregame for the Nats right now, because
there's actually a rain delay. So we actually probably would have. Well, so I mean, we would have had to do.
They're in rain. I'm looking down there where the game is airing. They're in rain. They're not in rain delay theater. Charlie and Dave are doing rain delay theater. They're done.
They're not. I was just talking to Darius.
They're not done.
So
was Darius down here?
So
if they're not done, he needs to be over there.
So what I'm telling
Who's driving the car?
So what I'm telling you is there's a rain delay. They're doing pregame, though, for 30 minutes. And then Darius will be on at 6:10, and they'll go till 7.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So Grant and Danny, you're having to go, or is Darius all of a sudden doing a show?
That's a great question. I think they're going to be with him. They're going to play two replay segments. That's what
I was going to say. I feel like, because CK was asking me earlier, hey, what's the latest episode of Take Command? And can I have the audio files? because I think that there's going to be a rainout in Cincinnati, and they've made preparations, which is what they would have also probably done for us.
Yeah.
So we would have been gone. So poor Darius has to stay.
Sadly.
But you could have just had Vic. Why does Darius have to stay? What's Vic doing?
You're asking the hard-hitting questions, correct?
I'm going to go find out. When we get back, we're going to talk about NFL Power Rankings.